Welcome to our collective nightmare, where the weather is as reliable as a politician's promise. Southern California is once again under siege, not from the endless parade of influencers or overpriced avocado toast, but from a storm that seems hell-bent on reminding us that Mother Nature has had enough of our nonsense. A Pacific storm is unloading its fury, and it's not just a light drizzle to water your lawn. It's a deluge, threatening life, limb, and any semblance of sanity left in this sun-soaked dystopia. Evacuation orders are rolling out like an unwanted sequel no one asked for, targeting those unfortunate souls living near burn scars. Because why wouldn't we build homes in areas prone to spontaneous combustion? The LAPD is knocking on doors, trying to convince people to leave their homes before they become part of the landscape themselves. Meanwhile, Angelenos are advised to stay safe on roads that transform into rivers at the slightest hint of moisture. Rainfall totals have already hit dramatic levels along the coast. San Francisco received nearly an inch and a half, almost 75% of November's average in one day. But hey, who needs averages when you can have chaos? This isn't just rain, it's an atmospheric river dumping its existential dread onto our heads. As if traffic wasn't already bad enough without adding floodwaters into the mix, the Weather Prediction Center has issued a level 3 out of 4 risk for flooding rainfall over much of Los Angeles. It's like being graded on how likely your house is to float away while you watch helplessly from your couch. Highways are turning into slip and slides, with mudslides making surprise guest appearances. Because nothing says California dream like getting swept off Highway 101 by nature's wrath. And let's not forget about those burn scars, the charred reminders of fires past, which now serve as perfect runways for mudslides and debris flows. The heat from wildfires leaves behind soil so water repellent that even Noah would look at it and say, nope. Evacuation orders span across Palisades, Hearst, Sunset. And let's throw Eaton and Bridge in there too, because apparently nowhere is safe anymore. But don't worry, the heaviest rain should ease late Saturday, just in time for Sunday showers to keep things interesting. Roads will remain slicker than corporate tax loopholes. Minor flooding will be waiting around every corner like an annoying relative during holiday dinners. So here we are, watching storms roll in with grim anticipation while clinging desperately to our umbrellas, and whatever shreds of hope remain unwashed by the relentless downpour. Welcome to Southern California, a place where dreams come true unless they're drowned first.
And welcome to First World Problems, the segment where we tackle the pressing issues that keep you up at night, like whether your smart fridge is judging your midnight snack choices. Today, we're talking about Cat's Eye, the girl group sensation born from Netflix's Popstar Academy. Six young women, plucked from obscurity and thrust into the limelight. Their crime? Being too talented and diverse for their own good. You know, just another day in the life of a first world pop star. Imagine being one of 120,000 contestants fighting for a spot in this band. That's like trying to get a reservation at Nobu on New Year's Eve, but with more synchronized dance moves. And when they finally made it, they celebrated by wearing uniforms inspired by South Korean students. Because nothing screams rebellion quite like matching blazers and knee-high socks. A true nod to teenage angst everywhere. Cat's Eye is backed by HYBE Corporation, the same masterminds behind BTS, and Universal Music Group. Together, they've created what can only be described as a multiracial K-pop Voltron, its diversity on steroids. Each member hails from a different corner of the globe. It's like if Miss Universe had a talent portion involving catchy melodies and killer choreography. And let's talk fashion. These ladies have stepped out in everything from red leather outfits at Lollapalooza to Dolce & Gabbana dresses at the VMAs. Meanwhile, I'm just over here trying to find socks that match before leaving the house. The creative genius behind their look is Humberto Leon, fashion mogul turned music industry bigwig. He describes their style as tomboy meets rebellion. So basically, it's what happens when Hot Topic has an existential crisis. Their songs are mostly in English because nothing bridges cultural gaps better than singing about love and heartbreak in a language everyone can misunderstand equally well. They've got tracks with Spanish verses too, because why not throw linguistic diversity into this melting pot? But here's where it gets truly absurd. These girls are not just selling records, they're selling relatability. Yes. Between sold-out tours and Grammy nominations, they still want you, the average Joe or Jane, to feel seen and heard through them. Because who wouldn't relate to jet-setting across continents while wearing Prada? So there you have it, folks. Cat's Eye, a band so perfect it hurts our fragile egos almost as much as realizing our Spotify playlists will never make us famous. Tune in next time when we discuss other crucial first-world dilemmas, like how many streaming services does one person really need? Until then, remember, life's too short to take seriously, unless you're deciding which designer blazer best represents your inner rebel spirit.
In today's edition of The Daily Dose of Dystopia, we bring you the latest chapter in the epic saga of corporate accountability, or lack thereof. A federal bankruptcy court judge has graciously decided to approve Purdue Pharma's newest settlement deal, a move that promises to sprinkle a bit of money on the victims of an opioid crisis that's claimed 900,000 lives since 1999. Yes, it's true. Salvation comes with a price tag now. The Sackler family, those benevolent overlords who own Purdue Pharma, will contribute up to $7 billion and relinquish ownership. It's a touching gesture from those who have amassed fortunes while fueling an epidemic. Of course, these funds are just a drop in the ocean compared to the trillions in claims against them, an amount so astronomical it might as well be monopoly money. This legal odyssey has been branded one of the most complex bankruptcies in U.S. history. In this tale of justice versus practicality, nearly everyone involved is pushing for approval. After all, when you're faced with unfathomable loss and suffering, why not opt for the greatest good for the greatest number approach? It's like a moral buffet where everyone gets leftovers. Interestingly enough, opposition to this new plan is quieter than ever. Out of over 54,000 personal injury victims polled about accepting the deal, only 218 dared to say no. Meanwhile, others simply didn't vote. Perhaps they were too busy grappling with their own tragedies, or just realized their voices would echo into oblivion. In an ironic twist worthy of Shakespearean drama, none of the Sacklers were called to testify at this week's hearing. Because why bother involving key players when you've already written their immunity into law? Instead, we'll get public access to company documents that may or may not illuminate anything useful. But don't worry. The company will undergo a makeover and rebrand itself as Canoa Pharma by spring 2026. A fresh start indeed. And rest assured that future profits will nobly battle the very crisis they helped create. For individuals harmed by Purdue's products, the lucky few who can prove their prescriptions, there's about $850 million set aside. That translates into life-changing sums like $16,000 per person before legal fees, a jackpot surely worth every tear shed over lost loved ones. And let's not forget our government entities. They'll receive most settlement dollars over 15 years, while states continue their valiant struggle against addiction without any requirement to track spending effectiveness. A triumph of bureaucracy, if there ever was one. So here we are, watching as bad people win litigations and settlements become mere band-aids on gaping wounds inflicted by greed-driven machinations masquerading under lawful guises, all while overdose deaths trickle downwards. Thanks partly, we're told, due largely untracked settlement dollars, doing something somewhere out there beyond sightlines drawn by dystopian plot lines, unfolding faster than real-time comprehension, allows us pause long enough, even notice anymore anyway, anyhow, anywhere, anytime, soon enough, either way, whatever, whenever, whoever, wherever, however.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder life's big questions with all the enthusiasm of a DMV line. Today's episode is brought to you by an article from the Washington Post titled, "Trump's Boat Strikes Appear Quite Unpopular as Americans Again Support Due Process." Ah, due process. A quaint little concept that suggests before we send people off to brutal prisons or, say, conduct military strikes on alleged drug boats, maybe we should check if they actually did anything wrong. It's like the legal equivalent of asking for a receipt at the grocery store. You know, just in case. In our current reality show of life under President Trump 2.0, now with more deportations and fewer court hearings, we find ourselves questioning, what does it mean to be human? And more importantly, can humanity survive without paperwork? Imagine being so dedicated to cutting red tape that you skip straight to extrajudicial killings in international waters. It's efficiency at its finest. Why bother with trials when you can just play battleship with real lives? But Americans seem less than thrilled about this approach. According to a recent Reuters Ipsos poll, 51% oppose these strikes, while only 29% are on board. pun intended, even independents are raising eyebrows at the strategy, opposing it 53% to 22%. Turns out, people aren't too keen on turning the high seas into a Wild West shootout without any sheriffs around. Who would have guessed? And yet here we are, or rather, there they are, politicians tiptoeing around the issue like it's a minefield made entirely of voter disapproval ratings. Democrats might fear they'll look like they're siding with drug traffickers if they speak up too loudly against these policies, because nothing says tough on crime like letting suspected criminals skip trial and go straight to, well, not existing anymore. But hey, at least some politicians are speaking up, like Libertarian Republican Senator Rand Paul, who has called these actions extrajudicial killings. It seems even within Trump's own party, there's a growing concern about playing judge and jury on open waters. And let's not forget the Associated Press's fun little revelation that some victims were small-time criminals and amateurs, not exactly the narco-terrorists we've been led to believe were lurking behind every wave. So what's next? Will lawmakers muster enough courage, or polling data, to push back harder against these policies? Or will they continue their cautious waltz around accountability while hoping public opinion doesn't catch up with them? As Americans grapple with these existential dilemmas over lawlessness versus legality, and whether due process is worth saving, it seems clear that despite everything happening in politics today, and boy is there plenty, many still value those pesky old principles enshrined by founding fathers, who probably never imagined such scenarios unfolding two centuries later. Stay tuned for more musings from the Existential Crisis Hour, where irony meets absurdity head-on like two ships passing awkwardly close during target practice gone awry.
In this capitalist fever dream, the retirement of Walmart CEO Doug McMillon marks yet another chapter in society's relentless pursuit of profit. The announcement reveals a transition not just of leadership, but a continuation of the absurd dance where corporate giants play both savior and villain. Under McMillon's reign, Walmart has become a behemoth that thrives on the very chaos it claims to navigate so deftly. The narrative is simple. As tariffs and dwindling consumer confidence threaten to topple lesser retailers, Walmart stands tall, fortified by its ruthless supply chain mastery and grocery dominance. It's an empire built on rock-bottom prices that lure even the affluent into its fluorescent-lit aisles. A testament to the grotesque reality where consumerism knows no class boundaries. Everyone is prey. McMillon's legacy is one of transformation, a digital metamorphosis, positioning Walmart as a formidable foe to Amazon. Yet beneath this veneer of progress lies the hollow echo of failed ventures like Jet.com and Bonobos. Expensive gambits that highlight capitalism's insatiable appetite for expansion at any cost. Even as he championed progressive stances, halting ammunition sales post-tragedy or criticizing Trump's tariffs, these gestures are mere blips against the backdrop of a corporation that continues to swell unabated. As John Furner prepares to take the helm, his ascent from hourly associate to CEO paints a picture of meritocracy within this retail juggernaut. Yet it's merely another cog turning in an ever-expanding machine designed to maintain momentum. Regardless of who steers it, the cycle persists. Leaders come and go, strategies evolve, but the underlying drive remains unchanged, a ceaseless quest for growth amid societal decay. In this theater of capitalism, every boardroom decision echoes with cynicism, masked as innovation, while we hurtle towards an inevitable reckoning fueled by our own avarice.